Cape Talk.
The U.S. Report.
The U.S. Report with Adrian Brini, all the way from Manhattan in New York. Adrian, a very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us once again.
Hi, Abs. No problem. Happy to be here.
Adrian, thank you so much. I mean, we're looking at the images on CNN right now. Irma is getting there. And, any updates from you?
Sure. Yeah. So Governor Rick Scott was clear in his directive to the 5.6 million Floridians he ordered to evacuate as Hurricane Irma, which Scott said was way bigger than the state's worst, 1992's Hurricane Andrew. He said, leave now, get out, leave the state, evacuate. Now, 5.6 million people did not flee the storm, but a number of people stayed as Irma's fierce eye made its second landfall yesterday, and the full intensity of the storm began battering the state's Gulf Coast. That's the western edge of Florida. So Irma sort of made landfall initially on the Florida Keys, right above Cuba, before just sort of blanketing the state's western coastline. Irma had hit Cuba on Saturday as a Category 5 storm with 160 mile per hour winds, but has since been downgraded to a Category 3. That's not much better. That just means a lower sort of, the winds aren't as fast. But once a hurricane blows through, the deadliest part is the water. Water flows are historically the big killer in the hurricanes, and forecasters are worried about death by drowning during these so-called storm surges. Here's a clip of Rick Scott, the governor of Florida, explaining exactly what a storm surge is and why he ordered Floridians to evacuate.
This is a deadly storm. And our state has never seen anything like it. Millions of Floridians will see major hurricane impacts with deadly storm surge and life-threatening winds. The threat of significant storm surge flooding along the entire west coast of Florida has increased. And 6 to 12 feet, think about that, 6 to 12 feet of impacts above ground level is now probable. 6 to 12 feet, this will cover your house. If you've ever been, watch how storm surge works. It flows in fast, very fast, then it flows out. You will not survive all this storm surge. This is a life-threatening situation. If you've been ordered to evacuate, you need to leave now. Do not wait. Evacuate. Not tonight, not in an hour. You need to go right now. If you're in an evacuation zone, leave.
And are people from Florida, though, actually heeding the call to evacuate?
I mean, it's just like any sort of situation like this. I mean, I have friends in Florida on Facebook that said that they have hunkered down. They've gone to shelters. They have gone to places in their home or so-called safe spaces in their homes. Florida is going to be a different situation than Houston. Florida was not necessarily built on floodplains. So Houston has been built on floodplains. That's why the water got so high. Florida is used to hurricanes and more used to this sort of situation. So people generally know what to do. So no, not as many people have left as the governor would have liked, but people have gone to shelters, and I've been hearing reports of hospices and medical care facilities going to shelters where they have generators and they're able to access oxygen and other medical care. So at least people who are hospitalized or need that type of care are getting it in Florida.
Lovely. And, you know, it seems like it was just yesterday. One can't believe that it was 16 years ago, but September 9/11.
I know. I came to New York 6 weeks before 9/11, so it's kind of eerie, Abs, but today is the 16th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks on the U.S., and President Donald Trump will preside over his first 9/11 commemoration in office with a moment of silence at the White House. Trump and First Lady Melania Trump are also to pay their respects at a Pentagon ceremony led by Defense Secretary Jim Mattis and General Joseph Dunford, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So a native New Yorker, Trump has a mixed history with 9/11, often lauding the bravery of New York first responders who rushed into the Twin Towers while making dubious claims that thousands of people were cheering in Jersey City across the Hudson River from Lower Manhattan as the towers collapsed. Of course, he's meaning Muslim people when he said that, but it's in the past. Trump has also criticized President George W. Bush's handling of the attacks, and he is now in the same war in Afghanistan that followed, the 9/11 incident in 2001. So 16 years we've been in Afghanistan, 16 years since this whole thing started. It's kind of amazing. This is now the U.S.'s longest invasion. Built on that day.
16 years later, I tell you that much, yeah. But also, you talk about the mother of all hacks. What's happening?
Yeah, on Thursday, consumer credit rating agency Equifax announced what may become the most economically damaging hack in U.S. history, exposing the personal data of nearly half of all Americans, including Social Security and credit card numbers. So news of the hack came in late July, but it's thought to have continued for over 2.5 months. So analysts are calling Equifax's response executives going ahead and selling huge chunks of the company's stock before the news was announced of the hack, to rolling out a faulty online tool to help the public determine whether their data had been leaked. They're calling it all as a textbook example of how not to handle a consumer blunder such as this. So that's 150 million Americans whose data has been subject to this hack. So we'll see what Equifax does to try to stem this release.
Hey, and we thought we had problems, but yeah, and last but not least, the conclusion then of the U.S. Open.
Right, yeah. So in an amazing upset, Sloane Stephens took home the trophy on Saturday in the first All-American U.S. Open final since 1984 when Martina Navratilova, a naturalized citizen, beat Chrissy Everett. So Stephens, who started out the year ranked at number 957, bested Keys, who was the favorite, in two sets with consistent strokes, light hands at the net, and more importantly, calm nerves. Now, speaking of calm, Rafael Nadal was anything but in his effort to win his third Open title against South African Kevin Anderson, who made his first Grand Slam showing ever. Nadal bested the nervous Anderson in three sets with wide corner shots and scrappy court coverage. I mean, he got to everything, Abs. Still, Anderson was very graceful in defeat, saying that he had looked up to Nadal since the two were junior competitors at age 12. Each of them is now 31, I believe. So they've been at it a long time. And Anderson is, by the way, the first U.S. Open finalist who played at the collegiate level. He played at the University of Illinois for 4 years before turning pro.
Look, I tell you what, I mean, for me as a South African, I won't lie about it. You know, we always knew Anderson was there, but I mean, it's when you get to an event, to such a summit, then we start recognizing. So we can't lie, but I mean, I am, and I think many South Africans are immensely proud of him. I think this was a major feat. I wish he could have won it, but nonetheless, he gave it his all, and we can't ask any more of that. We can't ask any more from him. It's Monday morning.
I think honestly, the Arthur Ashe and the 23,000 fans, I think they just wrecked the nerves of both Madison Keys and Kevin Anderson. Kevin Anderson was just way off his game today, so Nadal just seized upon it. So.
Yeah, absolutely lovely. Adrian, always a pleasure chatting with you. We'll do this again on Wednesday.
Sounds great, Ab.
Thank you so much. Adrian Bruni, all the way from Manhattan in New York.